Our parasha describes a deeply charged moment, a moment where the Israelites are at risk of forgetting the Holy Blessed One. Surprisingly, this danger does not stem from lack or deprivation, but rather from a reality of abundance and tranquility that awaits them after conquering the land. And the verses tell us as follows. And it shall be, when God your Lord brings you into the land and gives you great and good cities which you did not build, and houses full of all good things which you did not fill, and you eat and are satisfied, beware lest you forget God. Why is the reality of abundance, of houses full of all good things, the backdrop for the danger of forgetting and the warning against it? What is it about this newfound plenty that destabilizes religious memory and one's connection to God? It seems the verses emphasize not the abundance itself, but its nature. This is a wealth for which we did not labor, which you did not build, which you did not fill, which you did not plant. This is a reality of plenty completely detached from personal effort, disconnected from any organic process. Against the backdrop of this unearned abundance, the Torah raises the fear of forgetting. Take heed lest you forget the Lord. The Torah expresses the concern that paradoxically, because everything is already there, ready, complete, and accessible, the need to ask where this goodness came from and to express gratitude simply slip away. It is precisely when confronted with a bounty for which I did not toil that the danger of blindness and forgetting becomes most acute. The Gemara in Tractate Chulin sharpens the true nature of this unearned abundance, imagining the tangible cultural reality of the space the Israelites were entering, a place where God would hand them fully stocked houses and vineyards they did not plant. And the Gemara says as follows, and houses full of all good things. And Rabbi Yirmiah bar Abba said that Rav said, this refers to slabs of pig meat. Rashi clarifies, dried pork stripes called bacons. The imagery is stark. The houses are full, but they are full of the forbidden. This wealth is far from neutral. It carries a deep foreignness, packed with items that a holy people should fundamentally avoid. Coming from an entirely different world and culture, it immediately threatens to blur Israel's spiritual boundaries. Furthermore, the Gemara notes that the dispensation to use these spoils was strictly temporary. Actually, this applied only during 7 years of conquest. Rashi explains, for the merciful one did not permit forbidden items except during the time of plunder. In other words, the license to enjoy these non-kosher spoils was a fleeting concession lasting for the 7 years of conquest and not a moment longer. A highly complex picture emerges from this. The Torah recognizes an intermediate liminal reality. There is a specific historic moment in which a nation enters a land, sustains itself on whatever it finds, and utilizes an existing infrastructure built by others, doing so even when those things completely violate their own way of life and divine commandments. This allowance for plunder during transition phase is temporary, partial, and strictly a less than ideal concession, bidyavad. And perhaps this is precisely why the warning against forgetting was so urgent. The true danger lies not just in the presence of wealth, but in the risk of turning a temporary situation into a permanent status. A life built entirely on the premise of, and it shall be when the Lord your God brings you to give you, a life sustained by spoils by the ready-made, by that which is handed over without a shred of personal labor, temporarily permits what is otherwise forbidden. Because of this, it can never serve as the true foundation for a covenant. Ultimately, we are left with the realization that surviving on found ready-made goods, exploiting the assets of a conquered land, is an imperfect provisional state. This 7-year dispensation creates a buffer period for conquest and settlement, but it is a period devoid of a fully realized covenantal life with God. A society cannot sustain itself on unearned abundance over the long term. Plunder and spoils, even when granted by divine decree, are fundamentally different from a true inheritance. A life lived on the back of unearned labor, relying on pre-filled houses and pre-hewn cisterns, is a temporary situation completely incompatible with the deep, enduring demands of a living covenant with God. To counter the danger of forgetting God, the Torah presents a threefold commandment. Fear the Lord your God, worship God, and swear by God's name. Ha'amek Davar reads this verse not merely as a general ethical instruction, but as a targeted guidance for a nation during or immediately following a war, a situation that involves the taking of spoils. Fear the Lord your God, meaning he should immerse his mind in the fear of God, the worship of God. And here the meaning is that he must direct the war itself for the sake of heaven, for the public good, or to fulfill the king's command, which is an obligation under the Torah. But he must not fight for his own personal pleasure in order to plunder and despoil and the like. The demand to worship God is not just a requirement for ritual worship in the narrow sense. It addresses the underlying intention of the action. Even war itself must be waged for the sake of heaven, which is defined here as acting for the collective good, for the sake of life, a life of justice, for the sake of the stranger, the orphan, and the widow, and for the sake of a life devoted to the observance of the whole Torah. Given that the broader context involves enjoying the fruits of a military conquest, the Ha'amek Davar clarifies that a desire for plunder and greed can never be the objective of the conflict. He continues and says, "But here, all who go to war are equal regarding the positive commandment of and worship God. And at a time like this, there is also no opportunity to fulfill the positive commandment, to God shall you cleave." This insight rests on a comparison with a remarkably similar verse found later in Deuteronomy. Fear the Lord your God, worship God, cleave to God, and swear by God's name. While the two verses are almost identical, one glaring difference exists between them, and it is upon this nuance that the Ha'amek Davar builds a powerful argument about the reality of war and plunder. The words "and cleave to God" are absent from the earlier verse that deals with war and its spoils. The Nativ explains that wartime creates a highly unique social reality. All fighters become entirely equal regarding the practical obligations of the commandments relevant to the situation. Therefore, the command "and worship God" applies uniformly to everyone on the battlefield, not just to unique individuals of an elevated spiritual caliber. Conversely, in the raw reality of military conflict, it is impossible to demand the intimate spiritual heights of divine cleaving, dvikut, from the nation. During war, there is no opportune time for such spiritual intimacy. In the thick of battle and the division of spoils, everyone must align their actions toward serving God, yet the profound internal state of dvikut remains structurally unattainable. A time of war and plunder is simply not a time for cleaving to God. The danger of forgetting God does not arise from lack, but precisely from an abundance that is not the product of personal labor. Out of this, the Torah and the Netziv establish a clear boundary. In a time of war and plunder, there are three dangers: forgetting God, living under laws that do not allow the full fulfillment of the covenant, and remaining in a state where cleaving, dvikut, is impossible. In order to guard against the danger of forgetting, several requirements are made: to direct one's actions for the sake of heaven, to act for the public good, and not to turn plunder into an objective. The dispensation granted during wartime and its immediate aftermath must be recognized for a limited time only, while striving to return to a life of dvikut and to the full fulfillment of the covenant with the Holy Blessed One. May we continue to act for the sake of heaven, for the common good, in a life that allows for the full realization of our covenant with God. Shabbat Shalom.